Chapter 9. No Safe Haven. Operations Booth, Police Plaza. Foley was sitting in front of the LEP mainframe, waiting for the results of his latest search. Extensive laser brushing of the Goblin shuttle had revealed one complete and one partial thumbprint. The complete print was his own, easily explicable, as Foley personally inspected all retired shuttle parts. The partial print could well belong to their traitor. Not enough to identify the fairy who'd been running LEP technology to the Bois Kell, but certainly enough to eliminate the innocent. Cross-reference the remaining names with everybody who had shuttle part access, and the list got considerably shorter. Foley switched his tail contentedly. Genius. No point in being humble about it. At the moment, the computer was crunching through personnel files with a partial print. All Foley could do was twiddle his thumbs and wait for contact with the surface team. The magma flares were still up. Very unusual. Unusual and coincidental. Foley's suspicious train of thought was interrupted by a familiar voice. "Search complete," said the computer in Foley's own tones. A little vanity. 346 eliminated, 40 possibles remaining. 40? Not bad. They could easily be interviewed. An opportunity to use the retimeter once again. But there was another way to narrow the field. Computer, cross-reference possibles with level 3 clearance personnel. Level 3 clearance will include everybody with access to the recycling smelters. Referencing. Of course, the computer would only accept commands from fairies whose voice pattern it was programmed to recognize. As a further security precaution, Foley had coded his personal log and other important files in a computer language he'd based on the ancient tongue of the centaurs, Centaurian. All centaurs were a touch paranoid, and with good reason, since there were less than 100 left. The humans had managed to kill off their cousins, the unicorns, altogether. There were probably 6 centaurs under the earth who could read the language, and only one who could decipher the computer dialect. Centaurian was possibly the oldest form of writing, dating back over 10 millennia to when humans first began hunting fairies. The opening paragraph of the Skulls of Capella, the only surviving illuminated Centaurian manuscript, read, "Fairy creatures, heed this warning. On Earth, the human era is dawning. So hide, fairy, lest you be found, and make a home beneath the ground." Centaurs were known for their intellect, not their poetry. Still, Foley felt the words were as relevant today as they had been all those centuries ago. Cudgeon knocked on the booth's security glass. Now, technically, Cudgeon shouldn't be allowed in ops, but Foley buzzed him through. He could never resist a crack at the ex-commander. Cudgeon had been demoted to lieutenant, following a disastrous attempt to replace Root as recon head honcho. If it hadn't been for his family's considerable political clout, he would have been booted off the force altogether. All in all, he might have been better off in some other line of work. At least he wouldn't have had to suffer Foley's constant teasing.
"I have some e-forms for you to initial," said the lieutenant, avoiding eye contact.
"No problem, Commander," chuckled the centaur. "How's the plotting going? Any revolutions planned for this afternoon?"
"Just sign the forms, please," said Cudgeon,
holding out a digipen. His hand was shaking.
Amazing, thought Foley. This broken-down shell of an elf was once on the LEP fast track.
"No, but seriously, Cudgeon, you're doing a bang-up job on the form signing thing."
Cudgeon's eyes narrowed in suspicion.
"Thank you, sir."
A grin tugged at the corner of Foley's mouth.
"You're welcome. No need to get a swelled head."
Cudgeon's hand flew up to his misshapen forehead. Still a touch of the old vanity left.
"Oops. Sore subject. Sorry about that."
There was a spark in the corner of Cudgeon's eye. A spark that should have warned Foley. But he was distracted by a beep from the computer.
"List complete." "Excuse me for a moment, Commander. Important business computer stuff you wouldn't understand."
Foley turned to the plasma screen.
"Lieutenant, we'll just have to wait for his signature. It was probably just an order for shuttle parts anyway." A penny dropped. A big penny. With a clang louder than a dwarf's underpants hitting a wall.
Shuttle parts. An inside job. Someone with a grudge to settle. A line of sweat filled each groove on Foley's forehead. It was so obvious.
He looked at the plasma screen for confirmation of what he already knew. There were only two names. The first, Bomb Arbles, could be eliminated immediately. The retrieval officer had been killed in a core diving accident. The second name pulsed gently. Lieutenant Briar Cudgeon. Demoted to recycling crew around the time Holly retired that starboard booster. It all made sense. Foley knew that if he didn't acknowledge the message in 10 seconds, the computer would read the name aloud. He casually punched the delete button.
You know, Briar, he croaked, all those jibes about your head problem, it's all in fun, my way of being sympathetic. Actually, I have some ointment.
Something cold and metallic pressed against the back of the centaur's head. Foley had seen too many Rock'em Sock'em movies not to know what it was.
Save your ointment, donkey boy, said Cudgeon's voice in his ear. I have a feeling you'll be developing some head problems of your own.
The Mayak Chemical Train, Northern Russia. The first thing Artemis felt was a rhythmical knocking, jarring along the length of his spine. I'm at the spa in Blackrock, he thought. Irina is massaging my back, just what my system needs, especially after all that horseplay on the train. The train? Obviously, they were still aboard the Mayak train. The jerking motion was actually the carriage, jolting over the track joins. Artemis forced his eyes open, expecting gargantuan doses of stiffness and pain. But instead, he realized he felt fine. More than fine. Great, in fact. It must be magic. Holly must have healed his various cuts and bruises while he was unconscious. Nobody else was feeling quite so chipper. Especially Captain Short, who was still unconscious. Root was draping a large coat over his fallen officer.
Oh, you're awake, are you?
He said, without so much as a glance at Artemis.
Don't know how you can sleep at all after what you just done.
Done? But I saved you. At least, I helped.
You helped, all right, Fal. You helped yourself to the last of Holly's magic while she was unconscious.
Artemis groaned. It must have happened when they fell. Somehow her magic had been diverted. Oh, I see what must have happened. It was an... Root raised a warning finger.
Don't say it. The great Artemis Fowl doesn't do anything by accident.
Artemis fought against the train's motion, climbing to his knees. It can't be anything serious, just exhaustion, surely. And suddenly Root's face was a centimeter from his own, his complexion rosy enough to generate heat.
Nothing serious,
spluttered the commander, barely able to get the words out in his rage.
Nothing serious? She's lost her trigger finger. The door cut it clean off. Her career is over, and because of you, Holly barely had enough magic to stop the bleeding. She's drained of her power now, empty.
She lost a finger? Echoed Artemis numbly.
Not lost, exactly, said the commander, waving the severed digit. It poked me in the eye on the way past.
His eye was already beginning to blacken. Well, if we go back now, surely your surgeons can graft it on. Root shook his head.
If we can go back now. I have a feeling that the situation below ground is a lot different from when we left. If the goblins sent a hit team to get us, you can bet something big is going on below ground.
Artemis was shocked. Holly had saved all their lives, and this was how he had repaid her. While it was true that he was not directly to blame for the injury, it had been inflicted while trying to save his father. There was a debt to be paid here. How long? He snapped.
What?
How long ago did it happen?
I don't know. A minute?
Then there's still time. The commander sat up.
Time for what?
We can still save the finger. Root rubbed a welt of fresh scar tissue on his shoulder, a reminder of his trip along the side of the train.
With what? I barely have enough power left for the mesmer.
Artemis closed his eyes, concentrating.
What about the ritual? There must be a way.
All the people's magic came from the earth. In order to top up their powers, they had to periodically complete the ritual.
Well, how can we complete the ritual here?
Artemis racked his brain. He had committed large sections of the fairy book to memory in preparation for the previous year's kidnapping operation.
From the earth thine power flows, given through courtesy, so thanks are owed. Pluck thou the magic seed where full moon, ancient oak, and twisted water meet, and bury it far from where it was found, so return your gift into the ground. Artemis scrabbled across the floor and began patting down Holly's jumpsuit.
Root's heart nearly shut down then and there.
In heaven's name, mud boy, what are you doing?
Artemis didn't even look up.
Last year, Holly escaped because she had an acorn.
Through some miracle, the commander managed to restrain himself.
5 seconds, Val. Talk fast.
An officer like Holly wouldn't forget something like that. I'd be willing to bet.
Root sighed.
It's a good idea, Mudboy, but the acorns have to be freshly picked. If it hadn't been for the time stop, that seed mightn't have worked. You got a couple of days, tops. I know Foley and Holly put together some proposal for a sealed acorn unit, but the council rejected it. Heresy, apparently.
It was a long speech for the commander. He wasn't used to explaining himself. But a part of him was hoping, maybe, just maybe. Holly had never been averse to bending a few rules. Artemis unzipped Captain Short's tunic. There were two tiny items on the gold chain around her neck. Her copy of the book, the Fairy Bible. Artemis knew it would combust if he tried to touch it without Holly's permission. But there was another item. A small plexiglass sphere, filled with earth.
That's against regulations, said Root, not sounding too upset.
Holly stirred, half emerging from her stupor.
Hey, Commander, what happened to your eye?
Artemis ignored her, cracking the tiny sphere against the carriage floor. Earth and a small acorn tumbled into his palm.
Now all we need to do is bury it.
The commander slung Holly over his shoulder. Artemis tried not to look at the space where her index finger used to be.
Then it's time to get off this train.
Artemis glanced at the Arctic landscape whipping past outside the carriage. Getting off the train wasn't as easy as the commander made it sound. Butler dropped nimbly through the overhead hatch where he'd been keeping an eye on the goblin hit squad.
Nice to see you're so limber, commented Artemis dryly.
The manservant smiled.
Good to see you too, Artemis. Well, what did you see up there?
Said Root, interrupting the reunion. Butler placed a hand on his young master's shoulders. They could talk later.
The goblins are gone. Funny thing, two of them dropped low for reconnaissance, then the other one shot them in the back.
Root nodded.
Power play. Goblins are their own worst enemies. But right now, we gotta get off this train.
There's another bend coming up in about half a click, said Butler. That's our best chance.
So, how do we disembark?
Asked Artemis. Butler grinned.
Disembark is a pretty gentle term for what I have in mind.
Artemis groaned. More running and jumping. Operations booth. Foley's brain was bubbling like a sea slug in a deep fat fryer. He still had options, providing Cudgeon didn't actually shoot him. One shot, and it was all over. Centaurs didn't have magic, not a drop. They got on by brains alone. That and their ability to trample their enemies underfoot. But Foley had a feeling that Briar wouldn't plug him just yet, too busy gloating.
Hey, Foley, said the lieutenant. Why don't you go for the intercom? See what happens.
Foley could guess what would happen. Don't worry, Briar. No sudden moves. Cudgeon laughed, and he sounded genuinely happy.
Briar? First name terms now, is it? You must realize how much trouble you're in.
Foley was starting to realize just that. Beyond the tinted glass, LEP techs were beavering away trying to track down the mole, oblivious to the drama being played out not 2 meters away. He could see and hear them, but it was one-way surveillance. The Centaur had only himself to blame. He had insisted that the operations booth be constructed to his own paranoid standards. A titanium cube with blast-proof windows. The entire room was wireless, not even a fiber-optic cable to connect operations to the outside world. Totally impregnable. Unless, of course, you opened the door to throw a few insults at an old enemy. Foley groaned. His mother had always said that his smart mouth would get him into trouble. But all was not lost. He still had a few tricks up his sleeve. A plasma floor, for instance.
So, what's all this about, Cudgeon?
Asked the Centaur, raising his hooves just off the tiles.
And please don't say world domination.
Cudgeon continued to smile. This was his moment.
Not immediately. The lower elements will suffice for now.
But why? Cudgeon's eyes were tinged with madness.
Why? You have the gall to ask me why?
I was the council's golden boy. In 50 years, I would have been chairman. And then along comes the Artemis Fowl affair. In one short day, my hopes are dashed. I end up deformed and demoted. And it was all because of you, Foley. You and Root. So the only way to get my life back on track is to discredit both of you. You will be blamed for the goblin attacks, and Julius will be dead and dishonored. And as an added bonus, I even get Artemis Fowl. It's as close to perfect as I could have hoped. Foley snorted.
Do you really think you can defeat the LEP with a handful of soft-nosed weapons?
Defeat the LEP? Well, why would I want to do that? I'm the hero of the LEP. Or rather, I will be. You will be the villain of this piece.
We'll see about that, baboon face, said Foley, activating a switch, sending an infrared signal to a receiver in the floor. In 0.5 seconds, a secret membrane of plasma would warm up. 0.5 seconds later, a neutrino charge would spread across the plasma gel like wildfire, popping anyone connected to the floor off at least 3 walls. In theory.
Cudgeon giggled delightedly.
Don't tell me your plasma tiles aren't working.
Foley was flummoxed. Momentarily. Then he lowered his hooves gingerly and pressed another button. This one engaged a voice-activated laser. Basically, the next person to talk got plugged. The centaur held his breath.
No plasma tiles, continued Cudgeon, and no voice-activated laser. You really are slipping, Foley. Not that I'm surprised. I always knew you'd be exposed for the donkey you are.
The lieutenant settled into a swivel chair, propping his feet on the computer bank.
So, have you figured it out yet?
Foley thought, who could it be? Who could beat him at his own game? Not Cudgeon, that was for sure. A techno fool if ever there was one. No, there was only one person with the ability to crack the Centurion code and deactivate the booth's safety measures.
Opal Cowboy, he breathed.
Cudgeon patted Foley's head. That's right. Opal planted a few spy cams during the upgrading work. Once you were kind enough to translate a few documents for the camera, it was a simple matter to crack your code and do a little reprogramming. And the funny thing is, the council footed the bill. She even charged for the spy cameras. Even now, the Boiskel is preparing to launch its attacks on the city. The LEP weapons and communications are down, and the best thing is that you, my horsey friend, will be held responsible. After all, you have locked yourself in the operations booth, in the middle of a crisis.
Nobody will believe it, protested Foley.
Oh, yes, they will, especially when you disengage the LEP security, including the DNA cannons.
Which I won't be doing any time soon.
Cudgeon twirled a matte black remote between his fingers.
I'm afraid it's not up to you anymore. Opal took your little operation apart and wired the whole lot into this little beauty.
Foley swallowed.
You mean?
That's right, said Cudgeon. Nothing works unless I press the button.
He pressed the button. And even if Foley had had the reactions of a sprite, he would never have had time to draw up all his hooves before the plasma shock blasted him right out of his specially modified swivel chair.
Arctic Circle. Butler instructed everyone to attach themselves to the moon belt, one per link. Floating slightly in the buffeting wind, the group maneuvered itself to the carriage doorway like a drunken crab.
It's simple physics, Artemis told himself. Reduced gravity will prevent us being dashed against the Arctic ice.
In spite of all his logic, when Root launched the group into the night, Artemis couldn't hold back a single gasp. Later, when he replayed the incident in his mind's eye, Artemis would edit out the breath. The slipstream spun them beyond the railway sleepers into a drift. Butler turned off the anti-gravity belt a second before impact, otherwise they could have bounced away, like men on the moon. Root was first to detach, scooping handfuls of snow from the surface until his fingers reached the compacted ice below.
It's no use, he said. I can't break through the ice.
He heard a click behind his shoulder.
Stand back, advised Butler, taking aim with his handgun.
Root obliged, shielding his eyes with a forearm. Ice slivers could blind you just as efficiently as 6-inch nails. Butler put a full clip into a narrow spread, blasting a shallow hollow in the frozen surface. Instant sleet drenched the already sodden group. Root was checking the results before the smoke cleared. He brought Butler up to speed. They had seconds left before Holly's time ran out. They needed to complete the ritual. After a certain time, it mightn't be wise to attempt a graft.
even if they could. The commander jumped into the dip, sweeping aside the layers of loose ice. There was a disk of brown among the white.
Yes, he crowed. Earth!
Butler lowered Holly's twitching form into the hole. She seemed like a doll in his powerful hands, tiny and limp. Root curled Holly's fingers around the illegal acorn, thrusting her left hand deep into the shattered soil. He pulled a roll of tape from his belt, crudely securing the finger to roughly its original position. The elf and two humans gathered around and waited.
It mightn't take, muttered Root nervously. This sealed acorn thing is new, never been tested. Foley and his ideas. But they usually work. They usually do.
Artemis laid a hand on his shoulder. It was all he could think to do. Giving comfort was not one of his strong points. 5 seconds. 10. Nothing. Then.
Look! Cried Artemis. A spark!
A solitary blue spark traveled lazily along the length of Holly's arm, winding along the veins. It crossed her chest, climbed her pointed chin, and sank into the flesh, right between the eyes.
Stand back, advised Root. I saw a two-minute healing in Tulsa once. Damn near destroyed an entire shuttle port. I've never even heard of a four-minuter.
They backpedaled to the lip of the crater, and not a moment too soon. More sparks erupted from the earth, targeting Holly's hand as the area most in need of assistance. They sank into her finger joint like plasma torpedoes, melting the plastic tape. Holly shot upright, arms swinging like a puppet. Her legs began to jerk, kicking invisible enemies, then the vocal cords, a high-pitched keening that cracked the thinner sheets of ice.
Is this normal?
Whispered Artemis, as though Holly could hear.
I think so,
answered the commander.
The brain is running a systems check. It's not like fixing cuts and bruises, if you know what I mean.
Every pore in Holly's body started to steam, venting trace radiation. She thrashed and kicked, sinking back down into a pool of slush. Not a pretty sight. The water evaporated, shrouding the LEP captain in mist. Only her left hand was visible. Fingers a desperate blur. Holly suddenly stopped moving. Her hand froze, then dropped through the mist. The Arctic Knight rushed in to reclaim the silence. They inched closer, leaning into the fog. Artemis wanted to see, but he was afraid to look. Butler took a breath, batting aside sheets of mist. All was quiet below. Holly's frame lay still as the grave. Artemis peered at the shape in the hole.
I think she's awake.
He was cut short by Holly's sudden return to consciousness. She bolted upright, icicles coating her eyelashes and auburn hair. Her chest ballooned as she swallowed huge gulps of air. Artemis grabbed her shoulders, for once abandoning his shell of icy composure.
Holly! Holly, speak to me! Your finger! Is it okay?
Holly wiggled her fingers, then curled them into a fist. I think so, she said, and whacked Artemis right between the eyes. The surprised boy landed in a snowdrift for the fourth time that day. Holly winked at an amazed butler. Now we're even, she said. Commander Root didn't have many treasured memories, but in future days, when things were at their grimmest, he would conjure up this moment and have a quiet chuckle. Operations booth. Foley woke up sore, which was unusual for him. He couldn't even remember the last time he'd experienced actual pain. His feelings had been hurt a few times by Julius's barbed comments, but actual physical discomfort was not something he cared to endure, when he could avoid it. The centaur was lying on the operation security booth floor, tangled in the remains of his office chair.
Cudgeon, he growled.
And what followed was about 2 minutes' worth of unprintable obscenity. When he had finally vented his anger, the centaur's brain kicked in, and he hauled himself up from the plasma tiles. His rump was singed. He was going to have a couple of bald spots on his hindquarters, very unattractive in a centaur. It was the first thing a prospective mate looked for in a nightclub. Not that Foley had ever been much of a dancer. 4 left hooves. The booth was sealed, tighter than a gnome's wallet, as the saying went. Foley typed in his exit code. Foley, doors. The computer remained silent. He tried verbal. Foley, 1, 2, 1, override. Doors. Not a peep. He was trapped. a prisoner of his own security devices. Even the windows were set to blackout, blocking his view of the operations room. Completely locked out and locked in. Nothing worked. Well, that wasn't completely accurate. Everything worked, but his precious computers wouldn't respond to his touch, and Foley was only too well aware that there was no way out of the booth without access to the mainframe. Foley plucked the tin foil hat from his head, crunching it into a ball.
"A lot of good you did me," he said, tossing it into the waste recycler.
The recycler would analyze the chemical makeup of the item, then divert it to the appropriate tank. A plasma monitor crackled into life on the wall. Opal Cowboy's magnified face appeared, plastered with the widest grin the Centaur had ever seen.
"Hello, Foley. Long time no see."
Foley returned the grin, but his wasn't quite as wide.
"Opal, how nice to see you. How are the folks?"
Everyone knew how Opal had bankrupted her father. It was a legend in the corporate world.
"Very well, thanks. Cumulus House is a lovely asylum."
Foley decided he would try sincerity. It was a tool he didn't use very often, but he would give it a go.
"Opal, think about what you're doing. Cudgeon is insane, for pity's sake. Once he has what he wants, he'll dispose of you in a heartbeat."
The pixie shook a perfectly manicured finger.
"No, Foley, you're wrong. Briar needs me. He really does. He'd be nothing without me and my gold."
The Centaur looked deep into Opal's eyes. The pixie actually believed what she was saying. How could someone so brilliant be so deluded?
"I know what this is all about, Opal."
"Oh, you do?"
"Yes. You're still sore because I won the science medal back in university."
For a second, Cowboy's composure slipped, and her features didn't seem quite so perfect.
"The medal was mine, you stupid Centaur. My wing design was far superior to your ridiculous iris cam. You won because you are a male, and that's the only reason."
Foley grinned, satisfied. Even with the odds so hugely against him, he hadn't lost the ability to be the most annoying creature under the world when he wanted to be.
"So what do you want, Opal? Or did you just call to chat about our school days?"
Opal took a long drink from a crystal glass.
"I just called, Foley, to let you know I'm watching, so don't try anything. I also wanted to show you something from the security cameras downtown. This is live footage, by the way, and Briar is with the council right now, blaming you for it. Happy viewing."
Opal's face disappeared, to be replaced by a high-angle view of downtown Haven, a tourist district, outside Spud's Spud Emporium. Generally, this area would be thronged with Atlantean couples taking photographs of each other in front of the fountain. But not today, because today the square was a battleground. The Bois Quel was waging open war with the LEP, and by the looks of things, it was a one-sided battle. The goblins were firing their soft-nosed weapons, but the police were not shooting back. They just huddled behind whatever shelter they could find, completely helpless. Foley's jaw dropped. This was disastrous. And he was about to be blamed for everything. Of course, the thing about scapegoats was that they could not be left alive to protest their innocence. He had to get a message to Holly, and fast, or they were all dead fairies.